The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Look at the screen. William Blix, the great red dragon, and the woman clothed in the rays of the sun. Do you see?
I know that I'm not smart.
Then how did you catch me?
You had disadvantages.
What disadvantages?
You're insane.
Do you see?
You're so sly. So am I.
Do you see?
You're supposed to be his friend, Jack. Why didn't you leave him alone?
Do you see? Mrs. Leeds, do you see?
Yes.
You on the set?
Smell yourself. Do you see?
Just you and me now, sport.
Do you see?
You've seen these films, haven't you, my man?
You owe me awe.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Min Hunter. This is a podcast profiling Michael Mann's 1986 adaptation of Thomas Harris's Red Dragon, Manhunter, a scene-ish at a time, and some scenes deserve multiple examinations and multiple examiners. I am talking to my favorite living film critic, the unbelievable and awesome senior critic at the New York Times. It is Manola Dargis. Manola, welcome back for more, man. Thank you so much. I mean, we did like four episodes of One Heat Minute together. We've done Mohicans, we've done Miami Vice, and it felt so nice to get you to come back and talk about Manhunter. Michael Mann in 86 God mode already. Thank you so much for being here and having a chat with me again.
I am very happy to be back and to be chatting with you about one of our favorite directors. Are you calling this Manhunter, M-A-N-N? Manhunter?
No, it's Min Hunter because it has to be a minute. It has to be a minute, right? You know, in our brand, it's Min Hunter. It was just right there.
Dude, I really thought that was a typo initially, and I was like, that typo, but actually very, very clever. But I do also like, we can call it Min Hunter. We can call it Manhunter with two N's because we are always hunting in a way, in a very nice, benign, you know, Mr. Michael Mann. I love thinking about him. And also, I don't know if you plugged this already or shared this with people who tune in, your subscribers and your fans, about Michael Mann's newest venture, which is this online venture that he has connected to Ferrari, which, you know, people should just Google Michael Mann Ferrari website and just check it out because it's very cool.
The archives are amazing, and I think that there's stuff that you and I have probably pored over because we're fans of his work before. Anytime you get a script that you can sometimes see his annotated writings, they've always been in sort of like short bursts, or you hear great stories about actors talking about building characters and performance and all those sorts of things. It's unbelievable. My favorite, my absolute highlight, which I know that you'll love, is he and Penelope Cruz, who was amazing in Ferrari, both at the same time had a revelation that they didn't want Laura Ferrari to walk like Penelope. So she wore orthotic shoes, like weird, like weighted shoes, so that she didn't have the same gait as herself, as the character. Like, so little tidbits like that that are just like mind-blowing for people like me and yourself. It's absolutely stunning. Yes, we've had a little chat about it. I poured through all the Ferrari stuff crazily because the only disappointing thing about Ferrari coming out recently on physical media is it hasn't got the whole archive of special features. Now you go on a website, which is amazing. So yeah, very, very great stuff. Looking forward to hopefully seeing some of his back catalog get into those archives in that virtual form. Would be pretty crazy.
I mean, because I think like you are living proof, and maybe I am too, I don't know, that, you know, Michael Mann's own kind of obsessiveness and perfectionism and thoroughness it kind of, I think, in a way, brings it out in people when we're talking about him. There's a kind of like you
Yes.
kind of get in that mindset, which is kind of a perfect little weird introduction to what we're going to be talking about now.
Perfect. We are recovering the mindset. We are, if you're watching the theatrical edition of Manhunter, which we are because it's the most readily available at the moment, besides the fact that I have heard that there's a gorgeous 70mm director's cut that is doing the rounds in Los Angeles. We are on the theatrical version. Manola and I are going to be talking about the Lecter scene. So if you're queuing it up, you're going to hear it with us. We're going to unpack it together. The 23rd minute and 11 seconds until the 29 minute and 35 seconds. We've just seen an encounter with Freddie Lowndes and Will Graham and obviously Jack Crawford. And after a little recovery moment, a brief moment there, Will tells Jack that he's going to go visit Lecter and he has to recover the mindset. And so we're going to kick off right now. Manola and I, we're going to dig in. And in this new series, if you're listening along, we are literally going to Roger Ebert, cinema interruptor style, unpack our scene. So I've invited Manola to stop. We can go back. We're going to watch the scene together and just unpack it as whatever draws our eye, whatever we catch in that minute. So in these minutes coming up. So you guys are going to listen along and we're going to chat all around it. Don't you just love his fingers? I have to pause it here for a moment. Or don't you just love his fingers over here, Brian Cox as Hannibal Lecter? Almost looks like he's gripping an invisible throat. He's
Yeah, no,
just
that's definitely. But I'm gonna wait till. Do you want me to start talking right now, though?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, anything. Let's start.
What I think is the first thing. So we have just heard William Peterson's character, Will Graham, who is an FBI agent who has suffered some trauma, and we have just heard him talking to a colleague played by Dennis Farina, Jack Crawford, and he's just said, we were just joking, recover the mindset. And to do that, he's going to Will Graham, the Peterson character, is going to go visit Hannibal Lecter, who he caught years ago, but obviously has a lot of residents. At this point, I think it's really important. So this movie comes out in 1986, and I think it's like very important to kind of set the scene in a sense, because I think for a lot of people, myself included, my introduction to Hannibal Lecter was actually in Silence of the Lambs, of Jonathan Demme, 1991 movie, which Anthony Hopkins plays him. So that was really in my head. And then I forget why, I did then watch Manhunter, and I was very blown away at how very different and interesting, and yet there are some commonalities between the portrayal by Cox and by Hopkins. But so the first thing that's really interesting about how Mann introduces Lecter is that first he introduces Lecter with a kind of sense of, ominousness. He's been introduced just in conversation, and now we see William Peterson is in some sort of jail. The jail is just wild. I've never seen a jail like this. I mean, it's actually a prison. I'm misusing jail. It's a prison. I've never seen a prison like this in a movie. And the most important thing about it is it's really, really interesting, is that Lecter's cell is completely white.
Yes.
Now, if you're thinking about, and when I say completely white, there are bathroom tiles that are the walls are all bathroom tiles, like you would see it really in a bathroom.
Yes.
And there's a navy styled aluminum chair that's been painted white, and all the bars are white. Everything is white. And Lecter, who we initially only see in partial view, and Blake was just mentioning his fingers, Lecter is also in. And this is very interesting and important for a couple of different reasons. One, because the color palette in this movie is very, very expressive. It's
Yes.
a very, very colorful movie. And this is a movie that's very expressionistic in the sense that the color really is used to undergird the characters and to express something about the characters and or the scene, kind of queasy colors. for Will, who we're going to hear that Lecter has figured out where Will lives or has a guess about where. I thought I was calling him Will, but Will Graham. I should call him Will or Graham. We know that Graham likes pastels, very Miami Vice TV show palette that he lives in. And now we've come into this white cell. I really thought a lot about this and tried to understand this as a choice, as a directorial choice. And one of the things it kind of it's colorless in a way. I mean, of course, white is a color, but there's something about that the person who's in the cell is devoid of something. You know, like for me,
Yes.
the absence of this very vivid, very beautiful color that man uses throughout. Sometimes the color gets a little queasy for obvious reasons. And of course, the use of red, right? And here, I just feel like when I look at this white cell, I feel like the walls could be splashed in red. There's just something about it that creates an uneasiness in it, you know? And I think it's really, man is setting you up for something. It's like, you know, it's tabula rasa. It's like there's no color. And now we're going to see someone who is profoundly colorful, as it were. So,
I think of it almost like it's you touched on something which I've been struggling to articulate, but it's like color deprivation because the whole movie is so expressive, and then you get here and that this very plain and non-queasy use of color actually becomes queasy because then you're hyper focusing on like little details. And right now I've just sort of briefly paused it on like 23 minutes and 30 seconds, and you see sort of a bluey kind of pastel-y tie, a green shirt. You know, Will Graham has kind of got a weird, it's not even a suit, it's just like a sports jacket and jeans. And he just sticks out so ridiculously here. And then even when you go over and look at Lecter, it's just sort of like pale skin color and like a shot of dark hair slicked back in the sort of Anthony Hopkins style, what you'd be familiar with Lecter. And he's lying down, and again, all his sheets are white. Everything is white in the space, and it's a bit of deprivation here. And as you said, it then almost like channels everything that Cox is doing and everything that William Peterson is doing as Will Graham. It's so wonderful.
It's really wonderful, but it's because I think that it really catches you off guard. I think it's because we're, you know, if even if we have not, I have not ever, and I hope never to visit a prison either because I'm in prison. I love care about prison. But I think, you know, you movies have been, you know, have had prison scenes from the very beginning. And so, and there's a certain kind of way that you introduce this. This is Michael Mann. This is just like a just one little instance of Michael Mann just like completely reinventing something, right?
Yes.
I don't remember ever seeing anything like this. And it really, when you first, you know, I kind of remember first thing going, oh, whoa, what, you know, what's happening? And then we get the introduction, the nice introduction to Lecter.
And especially after a guy who's like he's made his first movie. I'm blanking on it right now. Oh my God.
Oh, you mean Michael Mann's
Yeah,
first movie? Well,
Michael
the one
Mann.
that he doesn't want any of us to talk about, though. That's why you're blanking on it.
Yeah. It's
You can you're gonna
pre
edit this, right?
yeah, I'll edit this bit. It's pre-Thief. Oh my God. I've just
I know,
I'm
I know, I know. I've watched it. It's terrible. Hold on a second. But
going to look it up right now.
oh yeah, me
Gosh.
too. I'm looking it up.
This is
He tried to hide it for a long time. It was kind of
where is
LA
it?
Takedown? LA
No, not
Takedown.
LA Takedown. No, not that one. It's the
Thief?
where?
Are you thinking of Thief?
No, I'm not. I'm thinking of, my gosh, where it's him. Here we are. Okay, got it. All right, we're gonna cut this. Especially as Michael Mann made the Jericho Mile, where he's shooting in a real prison, and he's such a slave for authenticity in so many of his movies in many ways, and you know, pairing this authenticity with expressionism, you see him come out of the Jericho Mile, and it's like old bars that have been repainted 1,000 times. The rust is cracking through. It's so specific. And then you get here and it's like, this is nothing resembling like Folsom Prison. It couldn't be further away from that. It's a dreamland that you walk into as prison here.
Yeah, it's very weird, and it's very smartly destabilizing, I think.
Yes. All right, well let's hit play and let's listen to the delightful Brian Cox.
That's the same atrocious aftershave you wore in court 3 years ago.
Yeah, I keep getting it for Christmas.
Did you get my card?
I got it, thank you.
And how is Officer Stewart? The one who was first to see my basement.
Stewart's fine.
Emotional problems, I hear. Do you have any problems, Will?
Isn't he just a delight? I'll have to pause for a second. Did you get my card? Did you get my card? I could think of nothing else I want from this man. I don't want any cards. I don't want any correspondence. I don't want him to potentially know where to address cards for me to get.
It's very also so what we're looking at right now, so we've just seen Lecter, and as Blake mentioned earlier, you see Lecter's hand, and it is kind of spidery up on the wall, like a little spider kind of up on the wall, and you hear an audible sigh, and it's almost as if, oh dear, I have to deal with this man again. I mean, I can't do Brian Cox's wonderful accent, but you know, it's just almost like, you know, because what else is he doing? He's obviously awake, but you know, he's Lecter has very clearly created a entrance. You know, it just felt
Yes.
like his back is to the man who caught him. You know, because you get a sense like he already knew that he was coming. You
Oh,
know, he
yeah.
had the visitor coming, so that he has his back to him, and then very slowly turns around. And then what we see when our first real kind of look at him is that it's a classic, but different because it's Michael Mann over the shoulder shot. So right now the camera is positioned behind Will Graham's head, kind of on the right side, and we are looking. It's a very classic shot in a lot of ways, except the difference is the person on the other side is not like sitting at a bar or at a table or whatever, but is actually behind the bar, behind the bars. And Mann frames it so that Lecter's face is right between two bars, really offsetting. And so visually very smart. What he's doing is he's accenting, you know, this is where your eye, this is where your gaze is being directed, is to look at him. Also, really, really important, because I really believe that Anthony Hopkins and certainly Jonathan Demme both watched this
Oh,
movie
yeah.
for Silence of the Lambs, because this performance owes a great deal to, I mean, this performance really informs Anthony Hopkins in Silence of the Lambs. A couple different things. One, the slick back hair, which to as far as I know is not mentioned in the original novel at all, because I just checked it again. But also the way of emphasizing the whites of his eyes. This is a very, most famously, people will know this from The Shining, and it's the way where you tip your chin down, but you're looking up at the other person. And so what this allows you to do, you know, and it's something that's very, very clever, is that you really kind of, it accentuates the whites of the eyes. And so again, it's that kind of Jack Nicholson Shining thing where, you know, chin down but eyes up looking at you, and it's very eerie. And that's exactly what Brian Cox is doing here, and also what Anthony Hopkins will later do in Silence of the Lambs. Just wanted to point that out.
Lots of shots in Silence of the Lambs like that. Lots of shots, and then just, especially in Silence compared to Hannibal and things like that, which go, you know, which are doing completely different things. But he's way less monstrous in Lambs. He's so calm for a large majority of the movie before he gets to his monstrousness, and I think that that is informed by this performance, so big time.
Absolutely.
Big time. It's like
Absolutely.
it, have a look, have a style, have a theme, and carry it through the movie. And particularly about, there's nothing scarier than someone being completely calm, talking about all awful things. Oh, how was the officer that went into my basement? You know, emotional problems, they say. It's just like these little lines that he just sort of, the little dalliances, he just throws them off. Everything is a destabilizing tactic here. Even when you're in this like completely, you know, devoid of color, you know, no no sensory support. You're just sort of listening to the lines and you're looking at him, and he's this shock of color in the middle of all this white.
And they both have, I think, both of the performances, both Cox's performance, which is also really fun, I think, particularly for people who maybe have fallen in love with Brian Cox in Succession.
Yes.
It's really fun to see him decades earlier and just see how amazing. He was a trained Shakespearean actor. And I think, you know, his vocal performance is incredibly controlled and measured. And there's something just creepy about how he does it. But it's a very beautiful voice. And this is something that both Hopkins and he had, really amazing vocal delivery, but incredibly controlled. And but there's a kind of a touch of irony to
yes.
both, you know, placing both vocal performances that's really, really interesting. And you get a little bit on the page. I mean, one of the interesting things always is to think about how a movie translates a novel, you know?
Yes.
And a lot of the dialogue in this scene is actually taken
verbatim
from the book,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, exactly. The scene is so fun. Actually, you know, for me, Manola, my favorite of Thomas Harris's books is Red Dragon. Like, I love, it's such a pulpy read. It's so dense. It's got such great stuff. And as a huge fan of this film, I love seeing these just like ripped literally line for line from the scene and how well it plays, you know, because usually it's about, oh, we've got to condense something. We've got to do this. We've got to do that. But these little blasts of Lecter that are from the book are very, very true to the book. They keep it, they do so well with it. And especially some parts of the investigation too, they just do so well, like taking exact lines, exact sequences of information from that. But he's having a ball with it. He's just so, you know, a pulp novel is no Shakespeare. So for him, it's just almost like it's so in his grasp to just dance around this. It's wonderful.
But he's delivering it with such kind of interesting, it's gravity, you know, there's
yes.
kind of a gravitas there. I don't know. Well, let's keep watching it, because I know that this.
All right, here we go.
No. No. Of course you don't. I'm glad you came. My callers are mostly clinical psychologists from Cornfield University somewhere. Second raters, the lot.
Dr. Bloom showed me your article on surgical addiction in the Journal of Clinical Psychiatry.
And?
Very interesting. Even to a layman. I want you to help me, Dr. Lecter.
Yes. I thought so.
It's about Atlanta.
Okay, let's just stop for 1 second.
Yes.
There's a couple things happening here. What Graham has done is he said, I've read something. Also, I just want to go back to, in this little sequence that we just listen to and watched, once again, he rubs his eye. Once again, it's as if somehow he's just woken up from a pleasant little nap and he's breathing. There's just something so kind of off, but at the same time, there's a kind of casualness, and yet the laser intensity of his focus. I mean, he does rub his eyes, but otherwise he's really staring. It's like watching, he's boring his whole, you know, his eyes into Will Graham. And then after Will Graham says that he wants something, you start to see this little smile kind of start to go
and
up.
The way that he says yes, he just goes, yes. It's just like, it's so like, oh my God, it's goosebump inducing.
I liked Red Dragon too when I read it years and years ago, but I don't remember being particularly like afraid. I thought it was interesting to read Lecter and, you know, to read everything. This is just completely creepy in the way that it's not on the page. It's so interesting to me, you know?
Oh yeah. He's just like, yes. And just the way he says yes. And then he draws him in. And also when he gets the compliment, it's also very weird and striking, because he's like, oh, you know, it's very interesting, even to a layman. And he looks at him with, I don't know, it's like this like weird, it's almost imperceptible, but it's like offense. Again, he later directly addresses it in the scene, like, how did you catch me, Will, sort of thing. You know, like he's like, oh, this guy who's reading it and saying that he's a layman is the man who caught me. And there's this like little bit of hostility, and then Graham says, I need your help, Dr. Lecter, and then he, yes, it's just like, yes,
well, yeah,
exactly what I wanted, thank you very much, come on.
Well, Lecter was a forensic psychologist. I mean, he's very, we understand that he's a genius. He's insane, because that's one of the best lines. I have to say, Michael Mann wrote this. He has a sole screenwriting credit on this. And there's some very, very judicious trims that he makes to the original dialogue that's in that chapter. But there's a sense that, you know, he knows this is all a bunch of nonsense. You know, okay, let's get to the point. Get to, why are you here? You know, I almost killed you. Why are you here? You know, and now the smile to me is like, okay, now we're getting down to it. Yeah.
Now we're getting down to it. I'm going to play that just again.
Dr. Bloom showed me your article on surgical addiction in the Journal of Clinical Psychiatry.
He's like
borrowing his brows, curious.
Even to a layman.
This.
I want you to help me, Dr. Lecter.
What a smile. I'm pausing it here for
little
24
smile,
minutes.
Little smile, little nod.
It's so creepy.
Because he knows that he's being, that Will is trying to play him a little bit. And yes. It's not working. He's like, okay, let's get to it.
Let's get to it.
I thought so. It's about Atlanta and Birmingham.
Yes.
You read about it?
In the papers. I don't tear out the articles. I wouldn't want them to think I was dwelling on anything morbid. You want to know how he's choosing them, don't you?
I thought you might have some ideas.
Why should I tell you?
You get to see the file in this case. And there's another reason.
Pray tell.
Thought you might be curious to see if you're smarter than the person I'm looking for.
Then by implication, you think you're smarter than me since you caught me.
No. I know that I'm not smarter than you.
Then how did you catch me, Will?
You had disadvantages.
What disadvantages?
You're insane.
That is one of the great edits, though. Because there are two reasons, I can't remember, I'm sorry, you have to look it up in the book. There are two reasons, certain disadvantages in the book, but Michael Mann gets rid of the first one because all you actually just need is like, you're insane. And it's good because it's funny. It's creepy funny at the same time. And, you know, when you're making, you know, a movie that is about a serial killer, you know, it can be, it's grim. Obviously, it's going to be grim. But, you know, you still need to have modulation. You need tonal modulation. You need every so often the kind of grim humor, you know, that to kind of relieve the tension that's being built up to play with the audience, among other things. I think Mann is very good at that. And I think that it's a funny little laugh line, you know, and I think it actually just makes the scene all the better. So
it totally does. And it's also the entire genre is what disadvantage do these, because it feels... this is 1986. This is such a hot off the press behavioral psychology booming, becoming an entire industry, learning about criminal profiling in such a like scientific way. All of the different, I guess, the data science behind like these are the, you know, cataloging serial killers. This is what their motivations are. These are the psychological trends, etc. And sort of really getting that down. In 2024, whenever we see serial killers right now, a lot of the time it's harped on about their genius, you know, they're geniuses. And it's so funny that so early on that line and the, as you put it so perfectly, like the judiciousness of cutting that other line and making it and giving it that modular sort of beat of like, this is actually quite a funny line, but it actually cuts to the heart of everything in serial killer fiction, which is like, what are their disadvantages? Well, they're insane. they're insane. That's a disadvantage. They don't function like normal human beings. They are insane. It's like, that's where even the geniuses mess up, because they are compulsive. They do, you know, we're talking to a guy who's a cannibal. Like, even though he might be a genius, he's also a cannibal. So he has disadvantages. He needs to eat. It's such a great line. And Man Alive, we've paused it on 25 minutes, 13 seconds, just looking at William Peterson's face here. He is one of my favorite things in performances in general is watching how someone can harmonize with someone who's doing the bigger performance or harmonize with someone who's doing something in a performance. And it happens a lot in Michael Mann movies. But man, I love this, Manola. This sequence of what he's doing versus what Cox is doing is just so brilliant, because he is just hitting his notes that he needs to hit in exactly the most restrained way possible, trying to keep himself together and sort of armored to him. And yeah, it's wonderful here, because he has to actually be slightly forceful, a little delicately.
No, and it's That's a really, really great point, because I think what's interesting, so right now what we've frozen on is a picture of, it's kind of a flip image of what earlier, except it's not over the shoulder. It's interesting. The camera's is not, and I don't think the camera ever goes inside, except it scans things. But I think we really are outside the space of the actual cell, because what we're doing right now is that we are looking at Will Graham, and he too is framed between two bars, very similar, almost like a mirror shot of the initial close-up of Lecter, and now we see him, except that there's not an over-the-shoulder. We're not over the shoulder of Lecter, which is really interesting. I think the camera, it's not always the case, but where is the camera? Where is the director? Where is the filmmaker asking you to put your sympathies to a certain extent? But what's also really interesting is, like, whatever one thinks of William Peterson, and I am kind of agnostic about this. He has the most amazing bow legs of any human being I've ever seen. What's really interesting is the way that he is performing, and I'm assuming had been directed to act, is that his face looks almost void of expression. So what he's doing, it's very, very smart. He, in character as Will Graham, he's trying not to give anything to Lecter, you know, that he has just, like, he has put on this complete blank face, kind of like the blank walls, you know, and he is just trying to get Lecter, you know, he flattered him a little bit, kind of warmed him up a little bit, and now he's baited him. I mean, we have to think about, I'll let you see the files. It's so grotesque.
Yes.
It's like, you know, it's like some people get a, you know, a box of candy or flowers. He's offering to give Lecter gruesome, you know,
crime scene photography.
Crime scene photos that actually we do see in that one scene. You know, there's a scene where we actually see some of those photos because Will accidentally leaves them the file open and someone sees them. But, you know, this is grotesque, but this is like, he knows exactly that this is the bait that he has to put on the little hook.
So lovely. Let's keep going.
You are very tan, Will. Your hands are rough. They don't look like cop's hands anymore. And that shaving lotion is something a child would select. It has a ship on the bottle, doesn't it? Don't think you can persuade me with appeals to my intellectual vanity.
I don't think I'll persuade you at all.
Ah, no, here's an over-the-shoulder shot.
He comes forward so that they can do it. He's cutting there.
Behind Lecter. And in a way, you know, it's interesting because man wants us to see what Lecter's, you know, I think what this shot is doing by having the camera behind Lecter is that man wants us to see how Lecter sees Will Graham.
Yes.
And how is he making Will Graham squirm? He's just done a little read on him, much the way that Will Graham does, where he's like, oh, your hands are different.
And exactly as you said, this is the great comparison between those two shots, the previous shot we were just discussing in this one, which is, we were just talking about how much he's trying to do nothing. He's trying to be expressionless. And it's just in that moment where he's like, you're tanned, your hands are different. The shaving lotion, that's what a child would buy. He leans forward, and now Will's face is looking stern and like he's looking hard. He's hardened. All that softness and that like lack of expression is gone. And as Lecter sees him, he's in an intimidating figure. So he's there. It's just changed, slight change, but it's so great to see him like bait him into actually give me some emotion. Give me something. I want to hook you here. Oh man. Yeah. So lovely.
No, and I think, you know, showing us the back of Lecter's head just a little bit, I think increases that menace because it's now starting to feel like Lecter, we're starting to realize, is getting to Will in a way that Will does not want Lecter to get to him.
And no one wants Lecter to get to him.
You'll either do it or you won't. Besides, we have Dr. Bloom working on it, and he's the best.
Do you have the file with you?
Yes.
Pictures?
Yes.
Let me have them and I might consider it.
No.
dream much, Will.
Goodbye, Dr. Lecter.
You haven't threatened to take away my books yet. Let me have the file and I'll tell you what I think.
I love that even when he's off screen, him and Ola, he's so languid and delicious in the way that he delivers. Let me have the file. Come on. We're just playing. This is just fun. It's fun.
I want to, so right now what we've done, we've just heard him and he's got a kind of whiny plea. It's kind of like a kid, please mom, can I go out and play? The file filled with people murdered horribly, please. You know, I mean, it's really creepy. However, very important shot. And I can't believe I forgot this initially, that we were never inside, because, oh baby, are we inside the cell right now? Mm-hmm. Lecter has just said this, and this now we are in the cell, but very, very interesting. It is it's a high angle looking down at Will. You know, those old film noirs, you know, one of the favorite, like there'd be a shot of someone and they would look like they were caught in a big spider web, because there'd be like a shadow that would be like a spider web. And we knew that our protagonist was in trouble because they were a metaphoric spider web. This is very interesting shot. It's doing a couple different things. It suggests a few things. One thing, the higher angle, because we're not looking over Lecter's shoulder anymore. We're now just as if we were the point of view of a surveillance camera, let's say, inside the cell, except now we're pointed at the door. Will has turned around to look at Lecter as he's right in front of the door, and we're looking down at him. And at this very moment, who seems like they're in jail? I mean, it's so profoundly obvious, you know. I love going, I wish I had done this when I was rewatching, because I rewatched it recently, and I wish I had stepped through it in this kind of slow way, because I never thought about this. It's like Will looks like he's in prison. And not only is he in prison, but also the voice that is just talking to him is disembodied, but it's almost as if Lecter is staring down at him in a kind of weird way, right? I
mean, yeah, it's now the voice of the warden, you know? Give me the file.
Yeah, but it's like, right, because obviously, you know, not to get all too woo-woo California, whatever, but, you know, but what Lecter did to Will Graham previously, because we know, you know, he attacked him and almost killed him, he effectively kind of imprisoned Will for life, right?
Yes.
Will is haunted by Lecter. And this kind of, this shot, you know, which again suggests that Lecter has an advantage, because we're looking now down on Will, first of all, advantage. And second of all, kind of reminding us two things. One, that these men are in a very perverse way, two sides of one coin, as Lecter is about to say. We're about to hear that line. But that both men are in a kind of prison themselves. It's really, you know, this is so much fun going through it.
This is what I'm getting so much out of this man project, and why I think this is one of the new ways that I'm going to tackle anything that I do, is just I'm just in awe of every choice is so at a completely freakishly high level for a filmmaker who's like essentially making his third movie.
But done in a way that is not, I mean, you know, watching this movie again, and I've seen this movie at least five times, maybe more.
Yeah.
And I watched it again. And so I was horrified that I forgot that we were actually in the cell when here is it. But I think that that's actually interesting that I forgot in a way, because I think that one of the things about this movie is that, you know, it's very, you know, you can see man working out some visual ideas, you know, things are embellished, but there's also a kind of like, you know, he doesn't hold on the shot so long that we are like, oh, let me consider what the visual meaning of what is the larger meaning here. It's done pretty quickly, you know, so that you're just paying attention to what they're saying rather than thinking about, oh, look, Will is also in prison.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then the choice is, this is the next moment, which I'm going to start playing and talking, is that when Will goes to sit back down, he still looks in a place of discomfort. And how giddy
Because now we see that they are, exactly opposite
Yes.
each other, and each man is staring at the other. And the other thing is that Lecter is leaning forward and will, if he could push himself through the wall, if his back is against wood, because he looks like a man. He sat down, but you feel reluctantly, and he would very much like to get out of there.
He looks like Homer Simpson retreating in the hedge that
Yeah,
we've all
very
seen,
nice.
except he's trying to go through a brick wall because he does not want
Exactly.
to be there. If you look at the frame, it's 26 minutes, 14 seconds into the film, the theatrical version. It's just a delight because here it's Lecter has got this sort of cutesy face. He knows he's kind of won. He knows he's got the upper hand in this conversation right now, and it's just so great watching him do that. And here's where Will hands over the file. It's a really beautiful little moment. This is Barney, who we love so much from Silence of the Lambs, is the character here handing the file. He's giddy.
He
And he
just
gives him
stood
a
up.
look. He stands up and he gives him a look. He's just like, oh, thank you, Will. And now Graham could not look more uncomfortable. We see into his eyes as he's just scanning through everything.
Yes, it was a dissolve from Will Graham and his eyes. And I have stopped to try to figure out what the title of these books are, these magazines. Have you figured them out? Because I can't read them.
I can't read them either. I've tried to because it's like I
Yeah.
know, I've got to get. I
Well,
don't yet have.
he uses Crest toothpaste, that much
Crest
we know.
tooth. We know he uses Crest. That was an easy one to spot. And then there's.
There's some books in my, it's a big, there's one big fat book
I
in
think it.
green.
I think it
And
almost says. I'm trying to see if it says like diagnostic something
my
there.
guess is that these are all basically probably, psychology books and
Yeah,
magazines. They're just,
psychology. Yeah, definitely. Oh, there's a couple. Let's see if we can catch a couple of
yeah.
these. No, the writing is just blurred just enough.
It's too small. We'd have to watch it on the big screen, which would be
Oh,
really fun to see.
here. This one is the American Journal of Psychology. We can see
There we
this
go.
light. We can see
Yep.
this light green one
Yeah.
here, and there's some
Yeah.
others there. I might see if I can use Google Lens and see if I can figure out what
Yeah, that
those
would
are.
be
We.
fun. I'd like to see all that's in there. But this is someone who, Lecter, he's got a few pastimes. One is cannibalism, but the other one is, kind of, he's a student. He is he's a constant student of the human mind. And this is really underscoring that point. It's funny. I thought of the scene in Black Hat too, because that starts in a prison as well, and we get a nice long lingering also semi traveling shot over his books as well, the characters, the protagonist's books in that movie. He was reading, I believe, Foucault, but Lecter has other tastes here.
Yes. And then, oh, I'm trying to see if they've got this.
And this is the only color in the movie, really. So there's a few pens, there's
Few
a the
pens and a
spine.
highlighter. Yep.
And but really, I would need a better or bigger screen
We need to
for
get some. We
that.
need to get this 4K. We need to get this
Yeah.
4K
This is a
scan.
very
Here we go. This is a very shy boy, Will. Here we. Let's start from this moment.
So what's been happening is that Will is looking at everything, and then when Lecter says this is a very shy boy, you see that Will's eye view snaps back right to Lecter. That's really, I think, key. Like, aha.
It ca catches him. He's daydreaming here across, like us, daydreaming over these books and seeing what he can glean from Lecter here. And it's just, it's
What are
kind
the
of,
clues? What are the clues?
what are the clues to this guy? And
This is a very shy boy, Will.
snap.
What were the yards like?
Big backyards, fences, hedges. Nice.
Because, my dear Will, if this pilgrim imagines he has a relationship with the moon, he might go outside to look at it. Have you ever seen blood on the moonlight? Well, it appears quite black. If one were nude, It would be better to have privacy for this sort of thing.
That's interesting.
No, it's not. You thought of it before.
I considered it.
You came here to look at me, to get the old scent back again, didn't you?
Okay, I want to stop us right now because this is a series of, we are now cutting back and forth, no over the shoulder shots. Just, they're straight on, straight shots, single shots. Series them as we're having this conversation, and they are framed identically.
Yes, framed identically, and increasing pace in something that has had pretty steady pace and trying to not make the editing too frenetic, keep with both of the characters, keep with this psychology. Now it's like fencing, patter, 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 patter between the two of them. It's wonderful.
Opinion?
I don't have one right now.
Well, when you have one, I'd like to hear it.
Can I keep this?
I haven't decided yet.
I'll study them. When you get more files, I'd like to see them too. You can call me when I have to call my lawyer. They bring me a telephone. Would you like to leave me your home phone number?
I love that. Would you like to leave your home phone? No.
That's
dating 101, Manolo. Would you like to leave your home phone number? No, I wouldn't.
This is classic cat and mouse, right? Yes. But this is classic cat and mouse where, in fact, they're not running around inside a room chasing each other. They are just, you know, they are chasing each other, you know, symbolically, metaphorically. And really, for the most part, William Peterson's vocal delivery through this is pretty steady.
Yes.
Whereas, really what we're getting from Brian Cox is that he is really playing with the musicality of it a lot, and just like, and putting those kind of like, well, of course he's that, you know, of course Will Graham is not going to give him the telephone number, but this is Lecter playing and having fun. He's just gotten this file. He's clearly excited by this, but we're not going to see him jumping up and down. We're just going to get this kind of, he's going to continue to, you know, kind of troll, for lack of a better word, Will, you know, at the same time threatening him. I mean, that's the thing, is like, behind all these things is this, like, behind saying, you know, oh, the aftershave of, as a child would have bought it, is his saying, I know about you, I know things about you. And every time he says something like this, leave your home, even mentioning his home is a threat, right?
Oh, and you just came back to me to get the scent. Like, that's a destabilizing thing, because he's already said it. He said it to Jack in the previous scene that he's coming to recover the mindset. He's like, you're coming back to get the scent again, aren't you? I know you. I know your inner workings.
Yep.
And then I want to know where you live, and I want to know your phone number, because then I can triangulate exactly where that is.
Exactly. But you don't want Hannibal Lecter to say the word home to you.
Never.
No, you just don't, because that's like, those are clashes that are very terrible.
It kind of destabilizes the fact that he's in jail when he starts asking where you live.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know how you caught me, Will?
Goodbye, Dr. Lecter. You can leave messages for me at the number on
the
file.
Do you know how you caught me? The reason you caught me, Will, is you're just the light. You want the scent? Smell yourself.
Oh, gosh. What an exchange. Do you know how you caught me, Will?
But what's great, there's a couple of things. So one, that line appears earlier in the chapter. Thomas Harris actually slips it in earlier, whereas what Van does, you know, this is, again, good adaptation. It's such a good line. He uses it to cap this particular scene, really, you know, that this is, and I think it's incredibly important that Will closes the door before Lecter actually says, smell yourself, you know? And it's like, but you already know that Will knows the answer to that. He knows.
He just doesn't want to hear it, Manolo. Yep. He doesn't want to, it's that last moment where he's like, I don't want to hear it. I know exactly what he's going to say. He's like, I know exactly what he's going to say here. And that's the last thing that I want to hear.
And the most urgency that we have seen is the entire time that Will Graham has been in this space with Lecter. He's been very measured, as we've talked about, both, you know, the expression is very pretty drained, not trying to avoid giving tells to Lecter that Lecter then can use. His voice has been fairly, you know, modulated. He hasn't, you know, he hasn't lost his temper or yelled or done anything like that.
No.
Until the very end, when he is turned, his back now is to Lecter the way that Lecter's back was to him when he entered the prison cell. A great urgency with which he knocks and then pounds on the door, and everything about what Will is, you know, what Will Graham is feeling is in that kind of incessant pounding, like, get me out of here, get me out of here. That's
what he's saying. He's smashing, and then he goes, you know why he caught me, Will? He's just raising his voice so that he keeps his attention. You know why he caught me? You can't bang on these walls. You can't mute me with this clanging of steel.
Nope.
You know why you're here.
Yeah.
And that's, and as you said, it's a great thing of adaptation, but it's also the great thing of the character. The wonderful thing of the Will Graham character is, and in so many different great movies, and, you know, we've even talked about Zodiac, it's like the psychological impact on the people who are studying these people, these serial killers, mm-hmm. is profound. And the fact that these profilers who all day to get good at their job, just like someone like yourself, who is such a consumer of art, you're good at your job because you're like, you consume all of this and you can channel it through your brilliant writing.
I've been eating those movies up.
You've eaten them. You've eaten them all. You've consumed them. But I'm just saying, as a profiler, you're consuming the worst aspects of human behavior. And so it makes you messed up. And then so with Will, it's like, what satisfaction does he get? Because Lecter is excited by those things. And in some ways, in some parts of the film, you see that Will has that same excitement. So the thesis of the whole movie is this, where is the line? When does Will Graham, does Will Graham ever like decide that he needs to go over the edge? And that perilous line that he's walking is actually what makes him so fascinating. And this scene is just great because it just tells you that that's the thesis of the movie. Like, hey, this guy's probably going to catch the Tooth Fairy, but he's also kind of broken, and he's also kind of maybe just like this guy in some way. You know, you need a killer to catch a killer or whatever. Man just gets to the heart of it so beautifully in this adaptation. And I love this scene so much.
It really is. And it was interesting, again, having seen Manhunter after having seen Silence of the Lambs. And, you know, yeah. I think that Anthony Hopkins is tremendous in the movie, you know, a little. It's funny, though. I love Silence of the Lambs. I feel like somehow, though, that like he kind of runs away with the movie, too. There's something a little indulgent about it. Like I'd have to revisit it. But I think that this is actually a better portrayal of someone who is purely evil. You know, like I just, maybe because it's shorter, we don't have any many scenes. And there's also this kind of like, very much in Silence of the Lambs, there's a kind of sexual dimension between a man who's kind of like, there's a kind of, they play with that kind of sexual, like he's trying to bring it out of her. It's a kind of weird, you know, courtship kind of thing where you don't get any of that here. You know, here it's very much the doubles, these kind of doppelganger figures in a way. But with huge differences. One is a kind, you know, loving husband and stepfather you know, and here's Lecter, who's left alone in his almost entirely white cell, you know, who's devoid of humanity, completely devoid of humanity. But Will has just kind of, in a weird way, kind of poked the bear, you know, if it makes that's very insulting to bears, but it's just like, you know, he's given something to him. It's a creepy little gift that he's given Lecter, you know, and the cumulative effect of this scene is very, very powerful over in terms of the overall movie, because as scary as the Tom Noonan, you know, monster is, I find that Lecter is a much more terrifying figure. You know, we see what, you know, the main serial killer has done, but Lecter really kind of haunts this movie in a really important way.
And he's playing, you know, He's playing with the strings. Future scenes we'll talk about. He's, you know, snap that little dolly down to G or whatever he says, down to, you know, finding the different names and numbers and like orchestrating potential, you know, assassinations of the people who are trying to hunt him down from his jail cell. Like he's even here in this room, he's such a threat. And it's, you're only really threatened by Dolarhyde when you're in his presence, because he's a giant, and because he's, you know, because you're going to get in the way of his vision of himself manifesting. But yeah, no, this is a magnificent scene, and it's so brilliant. And I love Silence of the Lambs too. But I find myself, the bits that I love is exactly what you talk about, when you just get the most erudite and sort of detached Hopkins, you know, just like when you're introduced to him and he's standing in the middle of that cell in Lambs and he just says, good morning. It's just like this weird, it's so, that's where he's scarier. Whereas the later stuff where it's a little bit more extreme, he's just dining out on the movie. And it's a classic for a reason. It's one of the great movies. So, I think the more you get scrutinized, the more people are potentially going to pick it apart. But when you just watch it holistically, it still really hangs together. But I love Cox in this. This is my, you know, he's a fascinating what if possibility. And I love what you said earlier, that Demme and Hopkins watched this. There's no doubt. No doubt.
Yeah. The hair, the slick back hair and the modulation and the way, I mean, you know, I think it's very smart. I mean, monsters are often most effective when you can't see them, right?
Yes.
So we like all the things about this, you know, squeaking floorboards and the shadows, because our imagination. And so here, Will Graham has gone to visit the monster. So how do you make the monster clearly monstrous without him screaming or seeing what he does? You know, I mean,
yes,
it's funny, like in the Thomas, I was, when I went back and read it, like Thomas Harris doesn't really give you a lot about what Lecter looks like. He says he's a small man, which you would never get here, because Brian Cox has a kind of a little bit of a barrel chest. He seems kind of substantial, not heavy, but just, you know, he doesn't seem like a small man. And then Harris also writes that Lecter had small white teeth, which of course, you know, we know what he does with those small white teeth. And a weird thing, maroon eyes, which I've never even heard of. And so this characterization of him, you know, he's clean shaven, his hair is slicked back like he's used a quarter tub of Brill Cream or something. And also, you know, I just wonder, I would love to read, you know, the casting notes on this. Brian Cox has a very, very pronounced widow's peak. And
yes.
So when his hair is slicked back, it creates this kind of strange, very, very, very pronounced widow's peak. It's almost like an arrow kind of like in the middle of his head, and visually it's very dramatic looking, you know, and you know, it's very clear that Hopkins and Demme studied this, because you know, it's so similar. But I think this is I would put both of these performances kind of up on the same tier, you know. I think they do, and Cox has less to work with here,
so much less. And he's even fun. Every other scene that he's in the movie, he's absolutely a delight. But in this scene,
absolutely,
it's really, he's turned up to 11. He's like, he's really dialed in. This scene has to work for the rest of the movie to work. And it just works in spades. Look, Manola, it is always a treat talking to you. Thank you so much for coming and unpacking this minute, frame by frame, pausing, coming back, talking all those things. Always a pleasure to talk to you about Michael Mann. And yeah, this is every one of our projects, I'm always trying to think of a way to have more Manola. So this is fantastic for you to be here. And I really appreciate all of your time and your great insights. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It is really a great pleasure. And I feel like just talking with you, it deepens my knowledge of the movies that I'm, you know, that I really love. So thank you for that. That's a real gift. And, you know, have me back. I'm happy to come back.
Well, we'll have to think of another pun title for the remaining man titles. We've still got Ali on the board. The big one that people keep prodding me about is The Insider.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just sitting out there in the wind.
It's just waiting for you,
it's
obviously.
It's waiting. It's waiting.
All right. I'll start smoking and give it up. So that an hour went by so quickly. Thank you so much.
This has been an episode of Mindhunter, the latest Michael Mann deep dive at One Heat Minute Productions. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to check out other deep dive series we've done on Michael Mann, go over to oneheatminute.com. You can find links to all of our previous shows, including One Heat Minute, The Last 12 Minutes of the Mohicans, Miami Nice, featuring Katie Walsh and I, and all modern man movies, including Collateral, Ferrari, Black Hat, you name it, it is there. And the Jimmy Kahn Eulogy, One Thief Minute. Plenty of shows over there. If you want to support everything that we do, we'd greatly appreciate it if you checked out our Patreon / One Heat Minute. Over there, you can see weekly new releases. One Hot Take is the show there. You can also see The Decade Project, where we look back 10 years on the films that are still hanging around, currently working through 2014. They'll be on the main feed at the end of the year. But if you are a patron for as little as $1 a month, you're getting them all throughout the year. And most importantly, as this is a Min Hunter episode, Min Hunter video podcasts will be popping up. Not every single episode, but most episodes will pop up as a video podcast as a drop there. So you can watch and consume and see all of the frames and images that we're talking about in all of these episodes. Every little bit of your support helps. So sharing, talking to us online at OHM Pods, or for myself at One Blake Minute on Instagram and Twitter. Thanks so much for listening.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.